This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Normalcy is just on the horizon, and it's time to come back and visit the Nittany Valley real soon. Your one-stop source for all the attractions, specials, and travel packages you need to plan that trip is at happyvalley.com. And a great excuse to come visit us here in Happy Valley is the Central PA Tasting Trail. It's got the very best of our region's craft beer, wine, cider, and spirits. Learn all about it at centralpatastingtrail.com. Man, for a football show that is not really about football, boys, there sure has been a lot of football the last few weeks on this program.
Too much football. Way too much football.
Yep, too much or too little. Well, the good news is we're going to take a little break from the football this evening, but there's plenty more coming up. Because we've got another fake blue-white game to talk about. There's the NFL draft, which we talk about annually. Again, some good prospects for Penn Staters to go early in the 2021 NFL draft. So that's all coming up. But tonight, we're going to take a little break from the football here on the Obligatory PSU Podcast and do the other thing that we like to do, which is highlight some of the cool characters and interesting stories that originate here in the Nittany Valley. So we'll be talking to Rob Lawless, a Penn State alum of the Rob's 10K Friends Project. On the other side of the intro, grab your pencil and your paper. You know what it is.
I've wondered how President Nixon could know so little about Watergate in 1973 and know so much about college football in 1969.
This is the Obligatory PSU Podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. You've listened to all those other Penn State podcasts. Now, listen to another one.
And we're back once again here on the Obligatory PSU Podcast. I am your fake host, ringmaster, whatever you want to call it, Chris Buchanani, joined as always by beloved Penn State campus icon, Mike the Mailman.
Hey, welcome, Rob. Welcome to here.
Former Penn State and NFL defensive tackle, Brandon Noble.
Not sleeping tonight.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you.
And as I alluded to before the intro, 2013 Penn State grad Rob Lawless, after graduating from Penn State with a degree in finance, Rob began working at the global consulting firm Deloitte. We'll leave our opinions of that company off this program. Later, moving on to startup venture RJ Metrics. When that company was acquired in 2015, he turned his full attention to the goal of meeting 10,000 new people and spending an hour one-on-one with each of them. To date, Rob has met over 3,500 people from 35 states and 60 different countries, along the way appearing on media outlets like The Today Show, On the Air with Ryan Seacrest, and most recently, and certainly least importantly, this dopey podcast. So, Rob, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here, and it's good to be surrounded by a handful of Penn Staters. Oh, yeah. I've done many podcasts through the project, but none as important as this one.
Oh, I love it.
It's all right. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Yes.
You can come back again.
I always like to name drop Paul Clifford on here because Paul's nice enough to listen to this show. And he always says, where would you rather be than a room full of Penn Staters? When even it's like a fake room, like we've been enjoying in the last, 14 or so months under global pandemic. This is great. So, Rob, let's just real quickly, because I want to get into a little bit of your backstory and what brought you to Penn State and what you did while you were there. But let's get to the punchline first and then start working our way back. Give people the view from 10,000 feet about your 10,000 Friends project.
Yeah, so I am, as you mentioned, I'm on a mission to spend 1 hour one-on-one with 10,000 different people. And I actually, to date, I have met... The person I just met was number 4,270.
Wow.
So I move pretty quickly. I meet about 20 new people every week. I started the project in November of 2015. I took it full time after I was laid off in July of 2016. And ever since then, I've just been meeting people full time. The first 3,259 people were all in person. And that took place in Philadelphia, where I started the project. And then Los Angeles and New York City, both of those cities strictly because I had Penn State friends there who were willing to host me. And also about 20 different cities in the US when I drove back and forth across the country 6 different times, and at the last 1,000 people have been virtual because of the pandemic, but it's opened up the project in a really beautiful way. And like you mentioned, now I speak to people from different countries every single day, and my perspective in life just continues to evolve and evolve and grow. And it's been amazing.
That's awesome. I'm interested to get into this. And like I said, we're going to circle back around to it, but now let's rewind to talk about what connected you here with our show, which is, you know, you are an alumnus of Penn State University. So you're from the Philadelphia area originally, right?
Yeah, I'm from Norristown, Pennsylvania. So nice. I guess to clarify the suburbs of Philly, because I know you can get in trouble with that when you're at Penn State.
Right. Rob, I get in trouble. I live out in Exton and Chester Spring, like kind of that area. And I learned quickly not to say I'm from Philly, right? I am from around Philly or the suburbs. That's right. Yeah.
I learned quickly. I grew up in Norristown, Pennsylvania, and I went to a high school called Kennedy Kendrick Catholic High School, which no longer exists. But yeah, that was the thing. When you'd say I'm from Philly, then the Philly kids would say, oh, which, what part of Philly or what school?
Right. Yeah.
You don't want to be asked that question. You know, it's funny. This just came up in a conversation the other day, this whole, I'm from Philly, you're not from Philly thing. One point that I think a lot of the folks who come to Penn State from one of the, you know, either Pittsburgh or Philadelphia miss is that there are a lot of out-of-state students at Penn State. There's people from New York and New Jersey and Ohio, you know, Maryland, Virginia area, and then from all over the place and all over the world, really. And most of them know two things about Pennsylvania geography.
Yep.
Pittsburgh's on the left side, Philadelphia's on the right side. So if you're like me, if you're from Lehighton, which no one has ever heard of, not even everyone who lives in Lehighton, and you're an hour away from Allentown, and that only helps people if they know the Billy Joel song, sometimes you can explain to those people where you are from, and all they hear in their mind is, oh, he's to the right of Penn State, so he's from Philly. So then at some point or another, you catch the rap that you've been going around telling people that you're from Philly, quote unquote, when in reality, all you've explained to these people is I'm from the right.
Chris, I have a solution for all those problems.
Go for it, mailman.
Rob, just tell me you're from 19401. I mean, that'll do it.
Yeah. Hopefully their zip code knowledge will be top notch.
That's right.
And better late than never. I see Kevin Horn has finally popped in on this, which is good. You guys crossed over.
Yes, briefly. Man, I just took like one of the best naps of my life, but I missed the podcast by 15 minutes. So
no, you're good.
That's how it goes.
You're good.
The best 15 minutes of your life are gone.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not turning my camera on because you don't want to see this, but just know the nap was nice.
Sounds good for all involved. Okay, so Rob, tell us what got you to Penn State. Talk about your journey to Happy Valley.
When I was in seventh grade, my older sister started her freshman year at Penn State. And I remember taking the trip up and moving her into Tenor Hall. So it's her, and then I have a brother, and then me. And while my mom and my sister decorated her dorm room, my dad took my brother and I around campus. And we went to the creamery, we just walked around. And Penn State looked exactly what I imagined a college to look like the people throwing the frisbee on the lawn and the people walking around and the people wearing Penn State gear. And it was kind of from that day that I decided that I wanted to go there. Up until that point, the only place I considered was UNC because I was a fan of the basketball team, and so were a couple of other kids in my grade school. But from that moment on, it became Penn State. And I remember my dad saying, oh, they have this good football team. They're very rooted in tradition. They keep the basic blues, whatnot. And so we just started watching the games, and we would go up for a game every year. My sister was in the dance company Orchesis. So we would go up for a game, and then we would go up for her dance recitals. And it just became this place that I knew I wanted to go to. So she graduated 2007. When she graduated, my older brother started. So he graduated 2011 and I graduated 2013. But it was really my sister going there that kind of created the ripple effect of my brother and I going there. we all had very different experiences. Like it was three kind of separate tracks, the way that we treated our time there. But yeah, she started it, and we had a, one of us was a student at Penn State for 10 consecutive years. And I think honestly, last year because of COVID was the first time that I didn't make a trip to Penn State since I was in seventh grade.
Wow.
Good story. Love it. That is awesome. Yeah. I love hearing people talk about the moment or the experience or the connection that led them to fall in love with Penn State. Never gets old for me. Okay, so you get up here. God bless you. You made the very wise decision to pick a real major. Very, very smart move on your part. Let me commend you for that. So you majored in finance. Did you start out in that? You knew that's what you wanted to do?
No, I actually came in undecided. I think because I guess I wanted to give myself the best chance to get into main campus. My sister studied marketing. My brother studied finance. And I kind of saw where that took each of them. But I was undecided all the way up until the point where you had to determine your major. Actually, I remember going where you would go up in the summer for, I forget what it was called, orientation or whatever, that first time that you had to sit down with an advisor and choose your classes.
Fit cap.
Yeah. And
right.
I was between civil engineering and a general type of business. And the woman said, all right, well, you can do math 140 and that will satisfy engineering and business. Or you can do math 110 and that will only get you to business. And she was like, math 110 is much easier than math 140. So that was the day I dropped civil engineering. For business. And I just went in undecided, and I was interested in advertising or marketing or some type of creative field. I remember asking my advisor that if there was some type of intersection between music and business, because music is a big passion of mine. And I don't remember her having anything for me. So ultimately I was like, okay, I'm going into business. And then it was a decision of either supply chain or finance. Supply chain, because at the time it was the number one program. I'm not sure if it still is, but everyone in that field at Penn State was getting multiple job offers. And then finance, because I thought, okay, when I graduate, I want to make a lot of money and I want to make as much money as quickly as possible so I can quit that job and then do what I really want to do. And I followed a version of that path, which was making some money and then quitting and doing what I wanted to do. But yeah, I studied finance because I wanted to have the money, and it just seemed like the most logical thing, which I'm happy for. It was an important piece of the puzzle for me. And I graduated with student loans. Deloitte was a great job that allowed me to pay off those loans. And it set me up also with a lot of confidence to do this type of project.
That is such a sensible, conventional college experience. I wonder what that's like. So I know a little bit, Rob. I know you were a Lion ambassador, which we love for two reasons, because Lion ambassadors are probably the group that comes closest on campus to loving Penn State as much as we do. And but far more importantly, Mike the mailman himself is in fact an honorary Lion ambassador. As let me tell you, he never misses the opportunity to remind us.
That's right. definitely, Chris.
So talk a little bit about that, how you got into LA's, maybe some other things that you did on campus, that sort of thing. Just try to get a little bit of a background about your Penn State time here in the Valley.
For sure. And the clubs and activities that I was a part of is a direct reason why I got into the work I do today. But my sister, because she had gone to Penn State, said, you should do THON. I knew of THON, but she said, you should do a morale committee because those are the outgoing people. I think that's the people that you would find are like yourself. So freshman year, I joined THON on a morale committee. And then I did that. I joined morale sophomore year and I did morale junior year. And then I danced my senior year through Lion Ambassadors. So that was one piece. And then I was friends with one guy from LaSalle High School who I had met at a graduation party from high school, and he was going to Penn State as well. And he had diabetes, and we were going home to Philly for a JDRF walk to benefit or raise money for juvenile diabetes. And our other friend, it was the three of us, and he was in the car, and he said, oh, there's this fraternity that's starting back up on campus. And this alumni just put a bunch of money into the house, and they're trying to recruit a good group of guys from around campus. It's called Beta, so we should look into that. So I ended up joining Beta Theta Pi, and I was one of the re-founding fathers of that. So when I got there, there was no culture to it. There was just one guy from Nationals who made sure that we had like a pledging process and went and started the fraternity. So I joined Beta as a freshman spring semester, and I was in that throughout school. And then one of the guys from my morale committee freshman year wanted me to join Lion Ambassadors, and he really pushed for me to do that. So I joined Lion Ambassadors as a sophomore. And then when I became a junior going into senior year, I became a homecoming captain in the alumni relations committee, I guess. So, oh, and then Habitat for Humanity was a thing. Freshman, sophomore, and junior year spring breaks, I spent my spring breaks doing trips for Habitat for Humanity. So those were the big ones for me at Penn State, was Thon, Beta, Lion Ambassadors, which was probably the one that I dedicated most of my time to, Habitat, and Homecoming.
Wow. So one of the re-founding Beta alums who was in school between 2009, I guess, and 2013, is that right? So we should do an entire separate podcast on the worst, most challenging times in the history of Penn State. But yeah.
The important thing about Rob being in Beta at that time is that he met our mutual friend, real estate mogul TJ Bard, who is also worthy of a separate podcast, right? So we can discuss the life and times of TJ Bard.
TJ is a very, very good friend. Yeah. He actually, he's one of my best friends from Penn State, and he is the reason that I spent time in LA for my project.
Yeah, because that is how I knew you a little bit, is through TJ, who I have not seen in too long at this point. I don't think he is living in Don Abbey's backyard anymore, but still involved in the company and doing well out there. But that is what he was, the youngest real estate agent in America, according to Oprah Winfrey, back when he was like 15. That's the student body president during the Sandusky scandal. That's an interesting, one of the more interesting men's in the world, as they would say in that commercial. But not to get off track from your interesting life, Rob, but anytime I get a chance to name drop TJ Bard, I take the opportunity.
And to take things even further, I can confirm he's no longer living in Don Abbey's backyard, because I'm taking this call from his house.
Are you kidding me? Where is that? All right. Well, we're after this podcast, I'm going to make you bring him in front of the camera so I can yell at him.
Oh, he's not here. He's at work right now. It's 5:56 our time. But
classic.
Yes, separate podcast. Yeah, but great to
hear. What are the odds? Yeah.
Book him, Kev. Book him. He comes in, he rolls in 10 minutes late from a nap. He doesn't even turn his camera on. And then the first contribution he makes is to derail the whole damn conversation talking about Don Abbey's backyard.
That's a pretty sweet gig, though, to be honest with you. You know Don Abbey.
100%. To put things back on the rails, Rob, I will say before we transition to talk about Rob's 10K friends, I always say whenever I have a chance to sit down with anyone who is an undergrad during the time that you and Kevin were, from an alumnus perspective, thank you for everything all of y'all did for keeping everything, holding everything together. I mean, every once in a while, there are some really special classes or groups of classes that come through Penn State and keep the institution strong and keep, you know, perpetuating that thing on down through the years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially somebody who is connected to all the things on campus that you were, all of us who hold Penn State close to our hearts owe all of you somewhat of a debt of gratitude for just, you know, keeping the ship upright through a very, very tough time. So thank you for that.
Of course. Yeah. Happy to do it.
Shifting now, let's come back to your project and let's start by having you explain how exactly that came about. How did you identify that as an objective you wanted to pursue? And then how did you get going with it?
Yeah, so as you know, with Penn State and being involved in all those different clubs and activities, so I started to run into people all the time that I knew from whatever, like the fraternity, from Lion Ambassadors. I just saw familiar faces all the time on the way to class. And I was that type of person if I saw you, I was going to have my head up and say hello. I wasn't going to like put my head down and walk past that some people do. And that made my Penn State experience. Like when I went out to the bars, I expected to see people there other than the people that I went with. And it contributed a lot to my happiness. So when I graduated, I went from this community where I felt like I knew everyone, I was constantly running into familiar faces, to working in a cubicle behind a computer for 12 hours a day with like a bunch of like people in their 50s, 60s that I felt didn't really understand nor care about my stage of life. And at first I was like, okay, well, it's work. You know, you're not supposed to enjoy your career. You're supposed to go and make money so that you can afford to do things. And the entrepreneurship side of me, I minored in accounting and entrepreneurship. The entrepreneurship side of me was like, well, wait, there's a dude your age, looks just like you, started a company called Snapchat. He's worth billions of dollars. Or there's Mark Zuckerberg, who's what, 5-10 years older than you. He's worth billions of dollars. And not that I need to become a tech billionaire, but I was like, there are people out there creating their own paths. The guys from Weebly are a really great example of that. And actually, they started their startup week. I remember when I was a senior being at local whiskey, at the second, as we called it at the time. And those guys came in because they had been on campus for their the startup week. And I had a conversation with Matt Brezina. And I was just like, this is so cool that people are creating their own path and succeeding in this way. And to me, it doesn't click for me to work until I'm 65 and then retire when this seems like it's an option. So I was feeling unfulfilled in Deloitte. And in January of 2014, about 8 months after I graduated, I wrote a note in my iPhone notes. And I was like, I'm going to try to meet 10,000 people one-on-one for 10 minutes at a time. And I'm going to do it in 1 year. And I just thought it would be this really cool concept that people would think was fun to follow along with. But that was a terrible idea. And it sat in my iPhone notes for over a year and a half because there wasn't any substance to it. It was just a cool concept I had in my mind. But I left Deloitte. I went to the tech startup and I was doing sales for them. And I was having 30-minute conversations with these people. And I realized that was still short enough time for it to stay surface level. So I went back to the idea of meeting 10,000 people, but wanted to do it for an hour with each person to give us time to dive beneath the surface. And that was when I kind of just thought about the project again. And I was living in Philly. I was out of my parents' house again. I felt like I had full control of my time. And I said, I'll just start reaching out to people. And I was in sales. So the idea of messaging a random person and asking for their time wasn't weird to me. And being rejected, I wasn't afraid of it. So I just started reaching out to people and a couple people were like, sure, I'll meet with you for your project. I had nothing to show for it. Now I have an Instagram account that has thousands of followers and thousands of people and their stories. But before it was just me and an email and the promise that I was going to make something of it.
Very cool. So at what point did it start to become clear to you that this was going to be something that could become, I guess, something of a full-time venture?
I remember, I started it November 2015, and that February of 2016, the company that I worked for laid off 20% of the employees.
Yeah.
I was on the sales team. When I started there, the sales team was 5 people, and then it scaled up to 19 pretty quickly. When they laid that 20% of the company off, my team was really hit hard by that. And it went back to 5 people. So essentially all of the progress that I had made in my career was just swept out from underneath me.
Yeah.
And because, you know, prospecting still had to be done. So I had to go back to that type of work that I had escaped. And I remember thinking at that time, I had only met probably 20 people or something like that. But when you haven't met 0 people in 20 seems like a lot. And I enjoyed all the conversations that I had with those people. And I remember G-chatting with my brother and being like, hey, I think I have to take this full time. I think that I'm going to dive into it. And he said, I don't think you should do that. I think you need to have a job with income so that you can support yourself. And I remember saying, yeah, I think if I hit 50 people by June, I'm going to really seriously consider jumping into this full time. And then what actually happened is I had met 100 people by the end of June. The company that I worked for was bought out. I was laid off. my choice was not, do I stay at my job or do I take this full time? My choice was, do I look for a new job or do I do this full time? And I had 1 month of severance pay. So I thought, okay, I can do this 1 month risk-free. And if I like it, I'll continue going with it. And if not, I'll go back into consulting. And I think that's where the Deloitte piece plays an important role. Like I talked about in the confidence, because I always felt I could do the project 2 to 3 months full time, see how it's going. If it failed, I'd go back to Deloitte, PwC, KPMG or whatever. And I say, hey, like I was the type of caliber person who worked for you before. I took a risk. I went to a startup that was venture funded. I tried my own thing for a bit. Here's the skills that I've taken from that, that I can apply back to your firm. But it just never got to that point. And back then I was thinking, okay, well, if people like the concept of what I'm doing and I build an authentic audience, eventually I can use that for partnerships with brands that align with my values. Because back then on Instagram was like, you see these people traveling, they're building these massive followings and they're living these, they're getting paid for these lifestyles. And I just thought what I was doing was interesting too. It took a very different path, which we can get into financially from them, but that was the start of how I thought about it. And then it kind of evolved over time.
So I am curious about how you identify the people with whom you spend your hour. How do you find your new friends?
In the beginning, it was, there's a website in Philadelphia called billypenn.com. I was living in the Northern Liberties neighborhood of Philadelphia when I started this, and they had a who's next list. So who's next in the culinary scene, who's next in the political scene, who's next in the sports scene or whatever in Philadelphia. And I thought, okay, well, those are the people I'm going to reach out to, because then I'm hitting people from a bunch of different industries. And I emailed the CEO because I was like, hey, I know you have this list and you have this who's next bash that's going to bring all these people together. I think I'm going to buy a ticket to go because I want to meet some of them. And I figured I might as well invite you to be part of my project. And he was the very first person I met. He and I met November 11th of 2015. He thought that I had already met 1,000 to 2,000 people by the time we met, but I had to let him know he was number one. But he was nice. He enjoyed it. And then from there, I literally Googled Philadelphia artists. And it took me to this site in liquid.com. And it's basically just, it has a bunch of artists and you can look through their work. And I found artists whose work I thought was cool, like paintings. And then I would send them a message and say, hey, I'm working on this project. Do you want to be one of the first 10 people? Here's a little bit about me. I have nothing to offer you other than the fact that as my network grows, yours will grow with it. And fortunately, people took me up on it. And then it started to grow word of mouth, where people would say, oh, you know, I have some friends that you should meet with, or, you know, who would be really interesting for you to meet is so-and-so. And they would introduce me. Then I met a couple of Temple University students, and they reposted our pictures to their Instagram pages. And then it spread very quickly at Temple University, because I was only like a 10-minute bike ride away from there. But it wasn't me really doing, choosing people in creative fields, because I felt like that was an interest that I had that I didn't necessarily get to work in. There's a quote that I really love that's, business is my spouse, but the arts are my mistress. And I always felt that way when I was working at Deloitte, or working in sales at this startup. So this was my way to have that creative satisfaction. And yeah, then I started to have some press written about me right before I was laid off. That helped people reach out to me, and then just word of mouth. And over the years, the press grew bigger, the reaching out grew bigger. And recently it's been TikTok has been the biggest thing of people reaching out to me. But yeah, in the early days, it was just looking for creative people.
Interesting. Very interesting. So I do want to mention to everybody, as usual, I got everything linked in the show description, but robs10kfriends.com is the website. At robs10kfriends on Instagram is where you can find all the good stuff, the pictures and stories from the folks Rob has met. So now at this point, do you have people just coming to you? Since I see you can reach out to you directly through the website. Does that happen frequently now?
Oh yeah, I have probably 1,000 to 2,000 unread messages that I have to get back to.
Oh, wow.
Most of them through Instagram. I know that I have 83 unread emails because I have a certain folder for them, and I'm really bad about getting back to email things because it's so my, I treat my Instagram direct messages like my inbox, and that's where I do most of my communication.
Sure.
And that's the crazy thing about it. I put out one TikTok video in September of just me saying, hey, I'm Rob. I've been doing this project for the last 5 years. I've met some really cool people. It's changed the way I think about connection. If you want to meet, send me a message. And I think I had about 1,000 people message me from that. And I put out a very similar video in January and had about another 1,000 to 1,500 people message me.
So when you, let's go pre-COVID, first of all, when you would meet up with folks one-on-one, what's the experience typically like? Is there kind of a template that you use to approach to it, or did it vary widely based on the person you were meeting?
It varied. For me, a lot of people mistake what I'm doing as interviewing people, to the point where I had to write a blog post called PSA, I'm not interviewing people, and I send it out to every single person I meet beforehand, because I'm just a guy that wants to meet new people and wants to learn about who you are. And it can get tricky for people because I'm genuinely curious about their stories. And it can feel sometimes, I guess, like I'm interviewing them because I'm interested about their upbringing. I'm interested about what they do now and about where they want to go. And I couldn't articulate this to you back then when I started because I didn't know of it. But along the way, someone commented on an article that I had written. And they said, oh, this reminds me of the Ford method of conversation, which stands for family, occupation, recreation, dreams. And I have found that that is a really amazing framework to get to know someone. Because if you just ask questions within any of those four categories or all of those four categories, when you come out of that conversation, you're going to have a pretty accurate picture of who that person is. And they allow you to dive deeper into different topics within conversation. But no, there's no structure. And I tell people that all the time. The girl I just talked to before this was like, oh, I'm a little nervous for the conversation. And I told her there's no reason to be nervous because we have actually nothing to talk about. It's just us chilling and chatting and hanging. But yeah, for me, I just wanted to get to know people so that when I walked away, I felt like the next time I ran into them, I would be running into a friend as opposed to a stranger.
Hmm. Very cool.
It's probably, you're probably really good at it now after 4,000 plus of these, but you ever have to really pull someone across the finish line? You ever get like Mike the Mailman? It's really the worst. So if you were in an hour conversation with Mike the Mailman, you got to 45 minutes. I don't know. I mean, that would be impressive to me. So
it's like pulling teeth.
Yeah, I'm sure it varies, but you ever meet a real I don't know.
I have met people who are difficult to talk to, and I have learned to see things from their perspective. A lot of times people come to me because they're very socially anxious or they get really nervous with conversation, and they kind of see this as a safe space for them to push themselves outside of their comfort zone.
Hmm.
Yeah, which I'm very conscious of, and I can keep the conversation afloat at this point. I feel like with anyone, I can get us to that hour mark. And it's just a matter of being creative with the questions you ask. And when you catch on something that they're passionate about, diving further into that topic and just continuing to explore it until that dries up. And then you move to the next topic. But yeah, I've had a lot of people who I ask questions, I get one word answers. 5 minutes into the conversation, I realize they're not going to ask me a single question during our time together. And that can feel a bit more like work sometimes. But again, I try to think of things from their perspective, like what impact is the way I treat this conversation? What impact does that have on them? And if they can leave that conversation feeling confident about how they did, maybe they're more prone to go have another conversation in the future, and maybe that helps them grow.
And the polite and positive way you put that is why tens of thousands of people want to meet you, and we're doing this podcast for 17 people. So
precisely. No question. No question. So following along those lines, Rob, I think it is fair to say that in recent years, social discourse in general has gotten coarser. I mean, people are just, I feel like, meaner to each other than they ever have been. I don't know if it was just because we never had such an easy way to be mean to each other at the drop of a hat. And now, like, mobile devices and social media let us be mean so easily, but I feel like we're at each other's throats. Society feels like it has not been this tribal and sectarian in a very long time. And I'm wondering two things. Number one, does that ever manifest itself in these encounters that you have with folks? And do you view your project and what you're doing with it as some sort of a counterbalance to that? And I realize that second part is a loaded question, so handle it however you please.
I don't think that it ever manifests itself in the conversation. I'm a very chill, laid back person. So I'm, like I said, I'm a consumer of opinions rather than a provider of them. So I can sit back, and if someone's saying something that I don't necessarily agree with, I'm more prone to like dive into why they feel that way in a non-confrontational way, like trying to understand their upbringing more. Yeah, it never really gets to that place anyways. Like, I usually try to steer the conversation to just facts about people's life.
Sure.
Because like me saying I grew up in Norristown, Pennsylvania is not something that you're going to challenge me on and try to persuade me away from. It's just a fact of my life. So that's what I'm really dealing
with. Unless you say that makes you from Philly. Of course.
Yeah. Then we could have an argument about it. But yeah, I try to keep it lighthearted in the conversation with people. And I think people see that those are the types of conversations that I've had with the people before them. So they have that kind of expectation coming into it. I do see my project as somewhat of a counterbalance to that culture. And I think one of the things that I'm trying to do is be a positive example of what human connection should look like. That's been something throughout, and I think that's kind of a legacy that I want to leave for other people, and the space that I want to expand into in the future. Like, some my future goals are centered around creating more empathy in the world and creating more authentic connection. A message I really try to get across to people is I think that they should treat human connection as an experience rather than a transaction, because I think too many people treat it as a transaction, especially after they graduate from college. But yes, in terms of how quick people are to judge each other and whatnot, I do see myself as a counterbalance to that. And I like the fact that people look at my page and they see this white guy pictured next to this girl from India or this guy from Nigeria. And for them, it's like, okay, I see these things together. And sometimes I see these things in the headlines and it's always negative stuff. But here's someone that's showing a positive side of it.
That might be a good transition point. So what happens when you complete the project, right? So this is your livelihood. This is your life. This is your business. You're what are you, 40-something% of the way there? We're going to extend this. We're going to make it Rob's 100,000 friends and keep it going and for the rest of your life. Or are we going to move on to some of those goals that you just described?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who knows? Never say never of extending the project, but I currently am trying to get into public speaking as a way to support myself through the project. I did a TEDx talk at Emory University last weekend, and that for me is like a really cool jumping off point to get into it. And then I did a seminar for the University of Washington for a global conference that they had, and it went really well. And just teaching people how to talk about themselves, how to get to know other people, but sharing the lessons that I've learned through my project with other people. And that's a space that I plan to move into more and more from today until the day I die. Like, I always want to be speaking about the project. But the big thing is, once I'm done with the project, I want to become a lecturer or a professor at a university. And I want to have a freshman course where students pair off every class period one-on-one, and they learn from each other's backgrounds as opposed to a textbook or a PowerPoint slide, because I think that that will increase empathy. I think it will increase perspective. I think it will strengthen students' ability to explain their story in job interviews, dates, whatever. And I think that the connections that they create in that class, they'll be able to foster over the next 4 years at school. And I'm certain that those relationships will be more valuable than their least valuable general education course. So I'm not going to say my course would be the most valuable one they ever took, because an electrical engineering student needs to know electrical engineering, but I took Iberian Civilization or I took Elvis online, and I guarantee that the connections that I have made at Penn State were more important than the knowledge I got from those courses. So I want to create that course at whatever university will allow me to do it for them. I want to prove that it's valuable, and then I want to find a way to make sure that other universities can have professors do this on their campuses as well. And to me, that leads into that creation of empathy in the world.
And ultimately get a faculty position here at Penn State, of course, right?
Right. It's all just a plan to get back to Penn State.
That's a good plan and a worthy goal. A couple of things, Rob. First of all, I appreciate the fact that all of this originates from an authentic sense of curiosity about other people. When you talk about trying to get everyone to be a little bit nicer, a little bit more tolerant of their fellow human beings, I think that is an excellent place to start. But I am curious, are there any crazy standout stories? I know you've done like 4,000 of these, so I don't want to have you pick favorite, but it seemed like you're picking favorites or anything. I'm just wondering, was there any ever some set of wacky circumstances or something that really sticks out in your mind that you experienced while you were doing this?
There's a fun story, and I have plenty of stories that I could share with you, but one that I enjoy sharing is I met this guy in King of Prussia, and he reached out to me and said, I'm starting a brewery, so if you want to drop by, you can drop by the warehouse where the brewery is going to be. I'll get a couple beers from a local place and I can show you around. And I said, okay. And I met this dude at this warehouse, and there was nothing, no equipment there, no people there. It was me and him and one fold-out table with the beers that he got from the local place. And he pours them into the thing, and he takes me into the big warehouse, and it's just trenches in the ground. And he's like, that's where the vats are going to be. This is where the bar is going to be. And I'm like, that's where you could kill me and just roll my body into that trench and then cover it up and no one would ever find me.
I could see that coming.
So did the brewery ultimately get built? Did it happen?
Yeah, so it turns out it got built. It's called Workhorse Brewery, and my sister and her husband, both Penn Staters, had their rehearsal dinner there the night before their wedding.
Nice.
That's good.
Nice. Because up to a certain point, guys, that story was reminding me of something the four of us could all relate to, but then the brewery got built, so that was the end of that story. But, yeah. Okay, so my other question for you, Rob, is what have you learned from the process of going through meeting these 4,000 plus folks?
From a lessons learned point, I have learned, pulling from my TEDx talk, that I think the value of human connection takes on multiple different forms. And I think people only typically think of it in business, networking, dating. But what I've found is it can become an increased sense of belonging. And that was really what I started out for. Like, I wanted that sense of belonging that I had at Penn State. I've met people in Philly for my project that I've run into spontaneously, just bumped into them at a brewery in Seattle. I've met people in LA for my project that I've run into in New York City. So I've achieved that. The other thing is perspective and gratitude. Those are huge things for me. When you talk about crazy stories, actually, yesterday I met this kid who's 29 years old, got his undergrad degree at Cornell, got his MBA at Harvard, and he was just trying to put himself in a position to make a lot of money so that he could throw money at research to help cure muscular dystrophy because his younger brother has it. His brother is 25 years old, and the average life expectancy for people with his disease is 26 years old. So his older brother, who I talked with yesterday, was like, there's not enough time for me to just make money, throw it. So he's like, I'm going to try to make a drug myself to save my brother's life. For the last 2.5 years, he has dedicated himself to coming up with this drug. They took a biopsy of his muscle, which he described as understanding the lock so that you could create the key to open the lock. And then they did a test with his cells in the dish. They found they could correct his cells. They did a mouse test that went well. So he is currently manufacturing this drug to be completed at the end of June. And then he's going to do all the safety stuff, get FDA approval, and hopefully dose his younger brother with this drug by end of 2021, early 2022, to stop the progression of his muscular dystrophy and save his life. And I was like, wow, that is crazy. That puts things into perspective. Like, me taking on this project, I have put some traditional milestones on hold. A lot of my friends from Penn State, they have the savings accounts, they have the house, they have the wife, they're starting to work on kids. I have none of those things because I've chosen to go down this path. And I think that for me, it's going to work out, but this is my priority. And sometimes I can feel that pressure of time of like the traditional milestones creeping in on you as you get older. This guy is in the same exact position, but the stakes of his work are so high where it's like, you just don't know when his time could be up if he doesn't reach this goal. And that for me was a massive amount of perspective. And I've gotten that with people who've lost siblings and who've lost loved ones, who've lost parents. I'm 30. I've met a couple of months ago, I met two girls a week apart. One was 26. Both of her parents had passed away. One was 22. Both of her parents had passed away. And it's just like, you think how much maturing do you have to do? You've gone through a stage of maturity that some people don't go through until they're in their 60s, their 70s, or whenever they lose both their parents. And it just makes you actively appreciate the time that you have with the people you care about. So for me, that's a huge, huge thing. And I joke all the time, like, there's not much that I really care about in life. And it sounds bad when you say it like that, but it's the relationships and the time with the loved ones. And I don't put too much weight in the house, car, all that stuff. So huge gratitude and perspective that I get from people. And I've learned that doors can be opened. I've had some times where I've met someone. I met a photographer in Philly. 3 years later, I met a friend of his who'd been following my project the whole time. I met with her, and then she sent my project to the New York Post, to ABC. That led to now this covering me. And those were massive publications covering my project. It's like all because I met a photographer in Philly 3 years ago. So it taught me how this value can play out over time in really unexpected ways. And for myself, I've learned just the value of staying consistent and staying disciplined and staying determined. And those are all things that allowed me to get to the point I'm at today.
What a nice chaser of affirmational positivity. I mean, you know, whether it's watching the news or, God help me, reading Twitter or frankly, even pissing and moaning about our shitty offensive lines, like it's very easy for me to sometimes get to the end of my day and feel like I want to douse myself in lighter fluid and light the match. And, you know, you can lose perspective very quickly on how many absolutely amazing human beings there are out there. So I love, Rob, that with this project, you, a Penn Stater, are helping to be a vessel to get that out there for anybody who can encounter that and absorb some of those positive vibes. This was cool. I appreciate you coming on. Something a little bit different for us. We are, as we get into certainly the off season and into the summer, we're going to try to do a little bit more of this. Just surface some stories of interesting Penn Staters. And I guess my last question for you is, do you talk to a fair number of alumni as part of your project?
I do. It surprised me how many, when I was living in Philly, I just assumed everyone was Penn State. And then I met a lot of Temple people. But in general, I do talk to a lot of Penn State alumni. And there's a girl that just messaged me and said her entire family went there. So I should be meeting her soon. But, you know, when you see a message from a Penn Stater or you see a Penn Stater out in the wild, you automatically have that bond with them. And
for sure.
That's something that I really enjoy continuing to foster through my project. It always puts a smile on my face. And yeah, I hope that someday the university, like you guys, is proud of the work that I'm doing. And I hope it shines a positive light on them.
Well, we've done you absolutely no favors by associating you with this program. So as we always try to do, I just ritualistically, I disavow any support or connection with Rob or his program. I think it is terrible and I could not be more dismissive of it. And I'm sure Kevin agrees.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. We now have basically two Mike the Mailmans on the show, and one was way too many. with the positivity and rainbows and all the other stuff. No, but it was great to finally see you again, Rob. And I followed the project since the Billy Penn days, and because I have so many friends that I've had in line ambassadors over the years and mutual connections, and it's been really cool to see. Just tell TJ to call me once in a while, man. I don't know. It's been too long.
I'll do my best. I joke, if you're outside of a 50-mile radius of him, the calls don't go through. So I'll try
my best. I'm glad I'm not alone in that one.
Yeah.
Well on his way to his ambitious goal of meeting 10,000 folks, with several thousand in the queue, Rob Lawless, 2013 Penn State graduate. Robs10kfriends.com is the website. At Robs10kfriends on Instagram is where you can get all the pictures and stories from his many, many encounters one-on-one for an hour with people who start as strangers and leave as friends. So, Rob, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. I certainly appreciate the positivity. And if you're a longtime listener to the program, I promise we will descend right back into the negative muck, because we are going to be breaking down Penn State spring football. We will talk about the NFL draft. We'll have some more interviews coming up after that. So a lot of good stuff ahead in the next few weeks. You all know the drill. To help the show grow, spread the word, talk to your fellow Penn State friends, alumni, fans, spread the word about the Obligatory PSU podcast. Give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you consume your podcasts on. And if you're really feeling ambitious, you can, I don't know, go vote in the trustee election if you're eligible, and then write a review for this podcast. So for Rob Lawless, our guest, for beloved campus icon Mike the Mailman, honorary Lion ambassador, for former Penn State team captain, defensive tackle Brandon Noble, and for OnwardState.com managing editor emeritus or something, Kevin Horn, I'm your fake host, Chris Buccanani. Take care of yourselves and each other. We are.
That was the Obligatory PSU podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. Like and follow at Obligatory PSU.
Every time you hit like and subscribe, Mike the Mailman smiles.